Hello, everybody. Welcome to Cambridge Inside Out. My name is Robert Winters.
And I am Judy Nathans.
And today is, what is today?
February 1st.
So tomorrow morning at 6 o'clock, we get to do the whole Groundhog movie
routine, right? I completely forgot about that.
Yeah, actually, speaking of wildlife, one of the interesting things with the, I think maybe partly, maybe it's a regular thing, I don't know, or maybe it's because of the snow. We looked out the porch, off the porch window yesterday, and it was a big, gigantic turkey way up in the ash tree in my yard, who then promptly jumped on my roof. Ooh. And it's a flat roof, so I have a funny feeling we have some turkeys living on the roof.
Oh no!
Wintering over up on the roof, you know.
Maybe
they're huddled around the chimney or something.
Have you ever had squirrels or bats?
Yeah, we've had squirrels
in your walls.
Oh. We have one time we had them in the walls, and we have a gigantic raccoon who's living up there too. So
that's not good because they can get stuck and then die.
I've got a plan to deal with that. Yeah. Anyway, you know, lots of fun and games around the old house here.
Yeah.
You know, hopefully everybody got through all the snowpocalypse, right?
So thankful it happened on a Saturday, really.
Right. And we got a little bit less than what had been feared.
20 inches, no?
18, we got a little 20? Shy of that, I think, in Cambridge. Okay. Places like Chelsea actually got more. I mean, the gradation was quite a lot. So you could be just a town away and get 6 inches greater.
It's a good point,
Yeah, so I think we were probably 17, 18, thereabouts.
Yeah. And it was the wind.
Yeah, I think the eastern part of Cambridge probably got more than the western part of Cambridge even.
You could be right,
You know, it was that harsh. So, let's see. So what's actually happening around good old Cambridge, Massachusetts these days?
A lot of things. There were some meetings. Well, we weren't here last week, but there was a city council meeting,
which
morphed into this one, and we'll talk about that.
Yeah. And it seems like we jump from one perceived crisis to another. It's almost, it's sort of like mandatory.
Or issue. Crisis. I wouldn't know if it's a crisis, but an issue.
Well, I mean, it becomes a crisis if it causes a tremendous amount of distress among some people.
Right. Yeah, so that's a good point.
Yeah. So not long ago, and still continuing, there's the, you know, the North Mass Ave, and I really
That's continuing.
Right. Of course, at this point, we have to start differentiating between there's the Dudley to Alewife line.
That's a good
bike lane, bus lane controversy. There's the Porter Square redesign, and then there's the Dudley down to Porter or Roseland or thereabouts reconfiguration of roadways with dedicated bus lanes and bike lanes.
Wait, how is that different than the first thing you said? The first you brought up, Dudley.
It's a little bit different, as has been explained to me. There's no overhead trolley line.
Oh, they kept talking about
Trolley
that.
Square.
Where are those? Have I not noticed those?
They got to what they call the car barns, which is up around Cameron Avenue.
Of course. That's why it's called Trolley Square.
Exactly. So, you know, you don't have the same constraints beyond the car barns as you do between there and heading in toward Harvard Square. All right. So they did one section. They're going to do another section next. And then eventually they'll do what I think will be probably the trickiest one of all, which would be from Porter heading in toward Harvard.
Oh, gosh.
Parking removal. And
that's going to be, there's so many places along there. You know?
Yeah, a lot of small businesses, and also the parking generally starts to get a little bit tighter.
Yes.
In terms of utilization currently, so you know, options about we'll just transform some of the residential spaces to ones that are metered parking or just generally available. Well, if they're already fighting for spaces in some of those blocks, it's going to become a bit more of a firestorm, I think. But, you know, we'll see, you know.
And, well, they can't change the ordinance, right? That's like...
Let's be clear. Okay. Of course they can change the ordinance.
Can they? Okay, so why can't they?
Because of politics. In my view, remember all the city council candidates this past year signed a pledge saying under no circumstances will I even think about changing any of the timelines or goals of the ordinance.
This is before the election?
This is before the election.
You never should ask people things before an election.
Well, I vowed. Yep. I made one exception in terms of who I voted for, but I basically said anybody who's going to sign a pledge that says I will not listen to, you know, additional information, and I will never change my mind under no circumstances. I said, well, if that's your point of view, you should never be in elected position.
Yeah. No,
so now I broke my rule for one person who I wanted to see elected, but who had signed that pledge, but everybody else refused to sign it.
Yeah.
And I think that was the right thing to do, which is not to say that you want to obliterate the bicycle safety ordinance. It's just that you have to keep an open mind. Otherwise, get yourself a different job, you know, honestly.
Didn't everybody pledge?
No.
Not Simmons and not Toomey. Oh, but Toomey wasn't running. Yeah.
Right. Nor Paul Toner, nor Joe McGuirk, and some others too. So.
Oh, I thought Joe McGuirk did.
No. Oh. So anyway, so this is that has brought us to the point now where they're doing implementations.
Okay.
They're running into some troubles, and they've now or at least they've the city manager came back with a structure for an advisory committee on
this
bicycle safety ordinance, but honestly, if the you know, I think I was joking about it when I was writing. If the only thing this advisory committee is there to do is to advise residents that there's nothing that can be done, or other than the changing the color of the flexi post, then really, what's the point? You know, so I'm a bit kind of cynical about this. But you know, they would presumably be in place for the next phase, and then the next phase, and then. Once they kind of get in, then they start heading toward other places like where I live, you know, in which case there'll be yet another firestorm. So
refresh my memory. Wait, refresh again. On your street, is there a bus go down there?
Yeah, we have a bus goes down. It's infrequent though. So to me,
they're not gonna establish a bus lane.
No, honestly, the argument for dedicated bus lanes is sketchy at best when you have buses with a frequency that's basically not that frequent, you know. And
I think the 77 is pretty frequent though, isn't that the one?
Far more so than the 68 bus that goes down Broadway. We just don't have the width. We really don't have the width.
Well, that's true. Yeah.
I mean, it'll be interesting to see how they tap dance their way around a place like where I live, where there's a school on one side of the street with school buses, parking, and
parking there during school hours anyway.
Except for the school buses. Yeah, and a regular city bus stop, and on the other side, on my side of the street, there are Montessori and rock and roll daycare facility.
You got to drop off,
You know, and also City Hall Annex.
15-minute parking. Well, maybe not for City Hall would work there for drop-offs, but not if you're going in. I won't mention the bicycle store because you're not taking a car to the bicycle store, probably.
Yeah, but you know, I remember when I was going to work down MIT, if I took the bus, it was pretty routine that when you got down around where Lamplighter Brewery was, they were always making deliveries. So much so that
there's automotive places.
Yeah, so it was already kind of clogged.
Yeah,
so,
you just
and what are you going to do? Just make it even harder? So, and as I like to point out to people, if I was fire chief, I would want to know that there were certain roads that I could pretty much depend on that I could actually move emergency vehicles through quickly without a doubt.
They obviously have to consult with the fire department when they do this.
Right, but you know, there's politics even involved in there.
Wow.
But I, you know, Broadway, I mean, for better or worse, for as long as I've lived here, Broadway has been sort of a preferred emergency vehicles route through, you know, that cuts east-west in Cambridge, at least the eastern half of Cambridge. And if they start kind of turning it into a, you know, a chicanery Cambridge Street type of street or otherwise just sort of turn it into like a one-lane country road, you're going to have some issues, I think, with moving emergency vehicles through, unless there's zero cars and zero buses and zero anything on the road.
Well, I'm all for the buses. To me, public transit is, to me, more important than bicycle transit, but that's my personal thing. I mean, yes, it's important.
I actually think that in the long view, bicycle will not be king in this. Ultimately, there'll be other alternative vehicles, as Craig Kelly used to often point out.
Right, but they shouldn't be personal vehicles. I really do think we
No, down the road, you know, I mean, we sort of got our taste of Ubers and such, but maybe one day it'll be autonomous Ubers.
I hope not. We can't even manage this.
I know.
Years ago, you and I attended that autonomous vehicle thing, and it's just not going to work. If you can build a city up from scratch, yes.
Right. I actually think, I mean, it's not like I've researched this, but I really do think that by putting obstructions in the roads like they're doing for these so-called quick build bike lanes, that will actually limit they're going to have to undo a lot of that down the road.
What do you mean by obstructions?
Well, putting those little white posts that are jammed.
Oh, those things. Oh, yeah.
They may actually kind of need the flexibility on the road.
I hate those things.
Better. I think, you know, it was always my understanding from the people within public works establishment that they didn't really want those types of bike lanes to be the permanent design anyway. They never wanted that. I hope I'm not, you know, making a liar out of anybody here, but, if you look what happened down around Lafayette Square and Central Square, they were already trying to move them up onto the sidewalks as essentially a separated cycle track.
Well, that's the ideal, but that's harder to do in this, but just like on
Well, I know it's not a quick build, right?
That's, no, it isn't.
It's more of a,
you know what? I think green paint works just fine. When I see bright green paint, I stay away. And I think there's no, and a lot of other places have that. And those white flex things are horrible.
They are.
They look bad. And
right. I don't know. Yeah, they cut down on the flexibility for all the users.
And a lot of cyclists just go in and out of them anyway.
Yeah, I know. But, you know, we're kind of caught in this sort of rhetorical swamp right now where, you know, if you even so much as suggest some alternative ways of viewing bicycle safety, you're treated as some sort of pariah or a killer, you know. Mm-hmm. And but there really are different ways of viewing a lot of this stuff. And
I just feel like there's got to be some reasonableness here.
So that was sort of the one lingering issue.
Which will be ongoing, but maybe not quite as you're right.
Yeah, that will continue. And then as soon as they sort of build the network, they'll go, well, I don't know, is this really what we wanted? and then we'll see how it goes. But the latest big flashy issue, which it bewilders me that anybody had the lack of wisdom to even introduce, was this order having to do with the Fresh Pond Golf Course.
I know. What? We have a golf course? What? People didn't know about that. I mean, I admit, I didn't know that for years, probably. I just saw, you know, I saw there was golf. I didn't, whatever. But
right. So
lovely.
For those who are unaware, which probably are few at this point, there was it was a proposal, you know, it's sort of always cast in the most benign terms. It says to ask the city and city officials to initiate some kind of study of the usage of a Fresh Pond Golf Course in terms of membership, utilization, whatever, and to see whether there might be some opportunity other city needs and priorities. And then they actually had the audacity to start listing things like building housing on the golf course. And
unbelievable.
And I thought, well, first off, they can't do that anyway.
But they didn't know that apparently. Yeah.
Well, you know, listen, if you got elected officials and they all have got little research assistants and aides and whatever, and they don't know that.
Yeah.
Well, come on.
That it's wouldn't it take much? It's a Fresh Pond reservation. It's under the water.
I mean,
department.
Ultimately, it's all part of the Fresh Pond Reservation. And in principle, at least, that is under the jurisdiction of the Cambridge Water Board. There's also a Fresh Pond Advisory Committee that was, I believe, created pursuant to the Fresh Pond Master Plan some years ago.
Yeah, tell me, this Fresh Pond
Master Plan, that's an advisory committee.
But the Fresh Pond Master Plan, is that, because apparently the golf course was not the original, they had to get a special thing for it.
Well, I mean, originally that part of where the golf course is used to be part of Belmont. You know,
there you go.
Yeah,
all
so
right.
We annexed it.
Acquired it and then changed the use of it for this.
So, and then, so certainly when they, it is an accurate statement to say that when Fresh Pond was taken instead of using it for the ice industry when it was actually established as a as a water source, as a you know, a final or a almost final distribution water supply. That there was a golf course there. You know, but you know, so you did have some sort of wild areas there, and then it was a decision was made to make it into a golf course, and then they even sold off some house lots.
1938.
Yeah, so there are some house lots on the far, far edge.
Yes, that's true. That.
Yeah, sort of
up. All right, so this master plan,
which is like 20 some odd years old.
Happen after that?
Well, master plan is just a plan. I mean, there was a process that led to the plan and set up an advisory committee, but ultimately the any decisions come to the water board. Now, there's been for some time a little bit of ambiguity about water department versus water board, but ultimately,
but it's an advisory board. It's kind of like the recycling.
Water board is not actually an advisory board, though. No? Though that's been sort of debated at times on certain issues, but ultimately, the water board actually had, you know, back in before Plan E, before even the charter that preceded it, the water board was basically. You know, they had authority up to and including taking of lands and, you know, for water protection and more. You know, they were powerful, very, very powerful. Now, under a city manager form of government, does the water board have exactly the same authority that it had historically?
Doesn't
I think to
like
some
it.
Degree it does. I think over the reservation it does.
But they only meet four times a year.
Water board meets monthly. At least they
used to. I tried to look it up after
Roosevelt, but regardless, the point is they do have the authority, and you know, and that's not something they're going to. First off, they would never at this stage of the game authorize any building on it anyway.
I don't think
if it was legal, they just wouldn't do it.
They can't do it because of the water.
If anything, they would be acquiring private property in order to reinforce watershed protection.
You think that would be the first thing you'd find out before you put it?
You would think so, wouldn't you? You know, so I don't know. Maybe they ought to get themselves some new research assistants or something. I don't know. But in it, the wording of this proposal, this order, which was supposedly just informational, but the problem, the wording there basically, you know, floated the notion of various things like, you know, building housing projects on it.
Right. And it just brought out.
You know, I think, and you know, there is a question of the authorship of that order too. I mean, I think the lead author was supposedly Patty Nolan, but but you know, perhaps so, but then the question is, did she just create that in a vacuum, or is there a cluster of people associated with some of the various advocacy groups, whatever, around town who are kind of, you know, have the ear of a counselor, and then they're kind of lobbying for doing something like this. It was interesting. I will confess that one of the habits I have these days is that when I'm watching a city council meeting on online, I have in a separate window open the street listing and registered voter database. And when people get off to speak, I go, let's see, do I know who that person is? So I'll check out who they are, how old they are. And I go, wait a minute, we ever heard that name? I might Google it, whatever. So so I'm kind of cat. I mean, maybe this is sort of a nasty thing to do, but
I'm looking at it. No, I can do that because I watch it on TV because I tape it and then I have my computer open. So I watch it on the TV.
Well,
so I can
this is something I started doing really current during the Zoom period because I started noticing that there were these organized efforts to bring out a crowd of people for
and
public
scripted comments.
With a lot of scripted comments.
I have to say in the golf ones too, that you could tell some of that was scripted.
Actually, I would say it wasn't, maybe some talking points were
shared. Well, a lot about we have open space and then they list the ones.
But I think really it was more like the alarm went out and then the golf.
No, it was great. I loved hearing from all of them.
But you know, if you had a group of people who somehow had it in their mind that golf is an elitist sport done only by aristocrats who all live in 02138, you know, and we're the people of our revolution, you know, and we have to, you know, fight the man, You know, and if they have the ear of city councilors, and then that finds its way into language here, because then I would tell you, at least a week ago, the public comment was highly populated by people who are who were known commodities, you know, people who were affiliated with the Our Revolution group.
Not that many, though. There are only about 10 at that last week.
Yeah, but I at least four that were
And they came back this week too. I mean,
I mean, they were pretty clearly outnumbered by the golfing
community. You know, but I mean, we've talked about this, but it's like there's this attack, but it's like if you own property in Cambridge, if you own a car, it's like there's no room in this city for the haves in some way. It's like this is the that we have to do all of this because we have a homeless situation. We have a lot of situations in the city, but middle class, upper mid, you know, all right already, you know? I mean, that's when they come out on issues like this. They have every right. They live, you know, I don't care if other people use the, it also makes money. It's a self, I think they make their own.
I think, yeah, that's know? Right. I mean, you could argue, well, if we turned it into a luxury condominium development, it could make money too, right?
No, but the city would have to own that. They wouldn't make money from that.
Right. Yeah. Well, they would choose not to. They would probably choose to lose money.
We have all these other things that are great for it. The comparing like the someone, I guess it was a zine and somebody in public comment quoted it, like how many users of the golf course versus Kingsley Park, and if you divide by what's been, that you can't compare those things.
Well, I'm willing to forgive somebody like
you. Don't pay for Kingsley Park.
I'm willing to forgive somebody like Councillor Azeem because honestly, he's so young and I don't think he knows much about Cambridge. No. And I'm not saying that in a pejorative way.
No,
I'm just saying
he hasn't
he's a kid.
Been here that long.
He doesn't know. Listen, when I was first a student at MIT.
Right. How much did you know about the actual city?
I didn't know any. Honestly, you know how I really came to know the city is when I got involved in getting a recycling program going.
You know?
Well, I had to get to know like Sherman Street. Where's Sherman Street? Oh,
That's how you really got involved. That was your first foray.
And then, and I really, really got to know Cambridge when I was bringing backyard composters around to people's various streets and learning a lot about things that I previously didn't know about.
That's right.
You know,
so it takes a while to kind of learn. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's true. It's
a little awkward when somebody comes in here with the abundant housing ideology and just basically tries to impose on an established golf course that's been around for many, many, many decades with a lot of users. You know,
it's interesting. It's some of these people that advocate this, they say that they're for all this housing, and yet they also complain, like Harlan, that we are the fifth densest city in the country. And yet,
you know, ideology basically seems to supersede reason sometimes, you know, so that's what you get. But there's also another viewpoint, which is a little bit of validity to it. Yeah. You know, if the golf course, for example, was basically using nitrogen fertilizers and pesticides and whatever, and it was
tried to work on
they that, don't, they was, don't, they don't use that.
But there was that. Did you see the reference to the letter that was written by someone in Cambridge Day about sustainability and all, they've actually worked on a lot of stuff to that. I mean,
I
don't know.
So I think it's craziness really, but you know, there's also another thing. I associate this with progressives. A progressive basically never wants to leave anything well enough alone. You know, everything must be changed. You know, and the fact that we haven't looked at the golf course, well, it's time we looked at the golf course as, to meet the needs of the people, you know. And I think that's kind of a stupid way to look at the world, but that's just me, I suppose.
Meanwhile, we have all these city-owned parking lots, city-owned stuff that nothing's been
done. And if people have talked about doing something, they haven't. You know, honestly, if you want to build housing, you know, I think Central Square still has some opportunities where you could build more housing. You know, I think even in Harvard Square, there are some opportunities and you can do it in thoughtful ways, you know.
Also, one more thing, I brought it up because someone said, oh, but there's public courses in Boston and Brookline. I looked up Brookline and that's not easy to get to, by the way. And
they're pretty exclusive country clubs.
No. Brookline does have, I think, a public course. A couple, but they charge $30 for winter use.
Yeah.
We don't charge anything for that.
I mean, there's Ponkapoag down in the Blue Hills. There's Mount Hope by Mount Hope Cemetery up around Melrose. There's the Leo J. Martin Golf Course out in Weston, which I think is a DCR, maybe a DCR owned facility. So that's okay. A public course. There are a few around.
Yeah, there's this, I said, yeah, there is Brookline, but you don't just hop over and get there. You know, I just, and admittedly, a lot of these golfers do live probably in the area of Cambridge where it's more accessible. You can maybe walk there, but because there's not a lot of parking, but if you have a Cambridge permit, but then you have to use a car. So forget that. I'm sorry I brought that up. Okay.
Right. So the way it was adjudicated.
Yes.
Just to
okay.
Sort of wrap up this segment.
Right. Here, we have another minute.
It was that Councillor Toner kind of took charge, exercised his charter right when it was first introduced, which I think was the right thing to do.
Absolutely.
And then came back with a substitute order co-authored along with Mark McGovern and Denise Simmons that basically said, look, let's take the intrusion on the golf uses off the table.
Right.
Want to look at some other things that might be done in conjunction. I think Paul actually did point out something I knew about, which is that once upon a time where there's some inclines on one edge of the golf course, people used to go tobogganing in the wintertime. Mm-hmm. You could encourage cross-country skiing.
Oh,
there's a lot of things.
I went there last winter. I went cross-country skiing.
Yeah. Yeah. And I had actually never walked across the golf course, but until this past year. And then I did it several times and I think, well, this is great, you know?
Nice.
So, you know, there's a way to kind of live with it.
So that got adopted and there was a, I guess.
And even at least two of the sponsors from my understanding is basically said, oh, thanks for the alternate language. Cause you know, if I had really thought about this, maybe I wouldn't have really been behind it. So.
Yeah.
Anyway, we ought to wrap it up here, but we'll be back shortly with the rest of tonight's Cambridge Inside Out.